Composer John Lund did not start writing music for films and television programs until he was 32 years old. 2 decades after he began that journey, American audiences fell in love with the Crawleys and Lund's memorable themes with Downton Abbey, the ITV PBS program that follows an aristocratic Yorkshire family through the early decades of the 20th century. The show ended its 6-season run in 2016, but now a new film reunites the cast, writer Julian Fellowes, and Lund, who's written some new music for the film. I spoke with Lund from Dubway Studios in New York. So you have all these themes that work like leitmotifs for characters in the series. Was it difficult, or is it difficult to fit them into the context of a film? Do you feel like you have to fit in all the leitmotifs that people recognize from the series?
They're not really leitmotifs. I mean, I think the house itself has kind of got a leitmotif. But actually, in general, most of the music is not so much about individual characters, but more the relationships between them. So in the case of the movie, because it's not a direct, you know, it's not a remake of the TV series, it's actually a, you know, a direct continuation of the story. So the same sort of themes that we were utilising at the end of Series 6 got exported quite easily into the movie. So I don't think we ever felt like they had to be shoehorned. I think there was a definite feeling that we didn't want to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and that, you know, we wanted, everybody knew what was Downton music, and we wanted to keep that. So there was no pressure, you know, to change the music whatsoever. But neither was there pressure to, you know, oh, we must get that tune in there. The only real thing that we did, that I talked with the director before, was at the very beginning of the movie, we wanted to hold off on the main tune, you know, for as long as possible, you know, and to actually kind of utilise it for a specific moment. But, no, we just, you know, approached each scene, you know, and each cue on its merits, really.
And the movie does open with pretty much an exclusive music cue for the first several minutes of the running time, yes?
It's about 4.5 minutes long before you hear the first word, which I think is blimey.
Was that terrifying for you to have to carry that?
Well, I knew it was coming because, you know, I'd sort of planned it with the director. So I knew the beginning was going to be all music. I must admit, I was a bit surprised by the 4.5 minute length, but, you know, it looks fantastic, that first 4.5 minutes. And you can see why, you can see why it exists, that 4.5 minutes. But there's a reason for it, but, you know, without the dialogue. But yeah, it's an awesome responsibility because the music's doing everything, really. It's kind of imparting, you know, that kind of sense of drama, and it's giving you kind of little clues about, you know, what you're about to see and things like that. So it's still, although there's no dialogue, the music's still giving you a lot of information about what's about to happen.
So a moment ago you said everybody knows what the Downton, you know, sound is. And so that theme, that short piano theme, also has this kind of churning sound behind it that I think happens in a lot of the score throughout the series. Where does that kind of movement and churning theme come from, and how did that develop?
Yeah, I think it kind of goes back to when I was thinking about the music of that period, which I did sort of listen to a lot, but then actually discarded. And I was listening. I'm a big fan of Philip Glass, particularly his film scores. And so I kind of sort of, there's a kind of timeless quality to his music. And I thought that something, you know, similar would work in Downton Abbey. But there's also a kind of, there's more of a kind of pop music element almost to it that there isn't in Philip Glass. And although yet there is this classical veneer to it, I play the piano in it always, and I've never really found anybody who can play the piano part in the right way that I want, because I kind of play it like almost as if it's like Elton John. You know, I mean, maybe I should ask Elton John to do it. But do you know what I mean? It's got a more kind of a sort of aggressive tone rather than a kind of light classical sort of tone to it. So actually, you know, if you think about it, the music's kind of got this. It's got a combination of quite a few elements. There's a kind of Englishness to it. There's a kind of sort of element of systems music to it, and then there's almost jazz harmony or pop music kind of harmony at the same time. So that all those things kind of sort of gel together somehow.
Oh, I absolutely noticed the jazz and pop harmonies, especially back during the series when Lady Rose comes in and you're entering this age of a jazz era, and when there's new types of music coming onto the scene as well, that those elements do work themselves into the score.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So were there new elements that you were bringing for this even further continuation of the story that you felt that audiences might notice or listen for?
Well, there's definitely new characters and there's new storylines, you know, so there's new music for those. But then, you know, some of the storylines that were important at the end of season six have carried on into the movie. So I'd say it's about 50-50. There's probably at least 50% new music in it. But almost everything has been developed, you know, even further than it was, you know, in the TV series.
So do you have a cue in the series or the film where you think, I nailed it, that fits the person or the scene or the relationship so well?
But I think the first cue really nails it, because I think that holding the director's idea of holding off the tune until you actually see Highclere Castle for the first time, it's a massive part of the show. And in fact, every time I think I've now seen it in cinema three times, and each time that's happened, the audience have all clapped and cheered. So I think I can safely say that we've nailed that bit.
I read that you're a fan of electronic music and that your preference in composing for your own personal self is to write something denser or maybe harder than the music for Downton. But I always think that music comes from such a personal place within us as writers that I guess I'm wondering what, as a composer, you draw from when you write for the screen in general.
Yeah, that's a tricky one. I'm not one of those composers that divorces the music from the film. I'm very much looking at the screen and understanding the story and trying to make the experience for the viewer, you know, greater than the sum of its parts. And I think music's particularly good at that. And I can really only tell. For instance, you know, if it's a really tear-jerking scene, if I haven't been close to that myself when I've been working on it, then how would I know that it's working? I have to kind of let that happen to myself, if that makes any sense. You know, I have to actually get that feeling when I'm working on it, and then I know that I'm close to doing it. Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, I have to play these things over and over and over again. So, you know, there's a kind of technical aspect. But at least at one point while working on the cue, if I haven't felt really moved when I'm doing it, then I haven't done my job properly. So that's kind of what inspires me, really, is not to write, you know, fantastic music per se, but actually to write something that just, you know, works with a screen, and when it's at its best, you get to a point where you can't imagine that scene with any other kind of music. And I think there's a couple of places in the movie where I think I've managed to do that.
Who are the composers that you couldn't live without in your own life?
Bach, probably. Ravel, Debussy.
Yeah.
Stravinsky, Miles Davis, Duke Ellington. Sly and the Family Stone. Joni Mitchell. Love Joni Mitchell. You know, just about every kind of music, really.
Do you see any through line between any of them, or it's just kind of like this is the eclectic stuff that I like?
I don't. You know, I just like. I just yeah. I've been obsessed with music for 40 odd years, and I've gone through different phases of things. I must say, I've never really lost Bach, and actually, I do to this day. I still listen to a lot of Miles Davis and that kind of sort of 60s era of him, and if I even the early 70s, early kind of electronic stuff.
Oh yeah,
I
absolutely love that.
That was my gateway drug into jazz. Actually, was that Live Evil, Bitches Brew.
Oh, I mean, I just love that period. And so yeah, I quite often, if I want to feel, I put that kind of stuff on. I don't particularly like the stuff he did after his break and 1975, but everything up until then, I thought was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, it is dense and thick and just, full of mystery.
The level of excitement and kind of, and also really moving as well at the same time with this kind of, abstract world, is amazing.
Well, last thing I want to ask you is, what advice do you give to students that you speak to who may be interested in film or television scoring or composing themselves? What do you talk to students about?
So I try and impress upon them that they have to watch the picture and the dialogue. They are absolutely everything. I mean, most students that I kind of come to, especially early in their career, they've almost got this sort of sound that they want to, create, and that they're kind of half looking for a movie that's going to suit their music. And, that's just never going to happen. And so I try and get them to listen to as much different music as possible and experience. And, before I didn't do my first film till I was 32. But I'd 10 years of playing in pop bands, doing jazz, playing with contemporary dance companies, writing for contemporary dance, and also doing avant-garde classical stuff as well. So I had a real grounding in virtually every sort of style of music. And I like to think that people come to me when they don't really know what music is going to be right for the film. And because I can do virtually every style. So the students have to be really, really flexible. I mean, they might be strike it lucky that their kind of signature sound might work, for a movie. And some people have made careers out of that, but it's unlikely.
Yeah, really, this is a job, and you're hired to do the job for it, not for, you need to serve the movie, not the other way around.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. No, exactly, you've got to serve the movie. It's everything, the pictures and the dialogue are absolutely everything.
Well, John Lund, thanks so much for your time. We sure appreciate it. We're all looking forward to revisiting Downton and hearing your beautiful music alongside it.
Fabulous. Thank you so much.
Composer John Lund spoke to me from Dubway Studios in New York. Downton Abbey is now playing in theaters everywhere. For Texas Public Radio, I'm Nathan Cohn.